All right, what is up, partner up? I'm back. Jared's in the chair. I'm joined by Isaac today. He got to steal my line last week. Isaac, that was a heck of a conversation with Lockhead, man. I had multiple people send that to me and be like, I see what you guys are doing over there.
Jared, we've had Lockhead scheduled several times, and it's fallen through for various reasons. And one of the times we rescheduled specifically because you couldn't be there, and I'm like, Jared has to be there. This time we're like, we cannot reschedule this one again. This episode has been like rescheduled for like 4 or 5 months. It's just got to happen with or without Jared. So we missed you, but always, always wild and crazy to talk to Lockhead. I love that guy. He's just always, he holds no nothing back.
No, that's for sure, man. Holds no punches. So that was a heck of a combo. And then I'm excited to jump back in this week and welcome someone kind of sitting at the intersect of kind of, I'd say, two macro big changes. I mean, there's only a handful of macro, like big gigantic shifts in the world that can happen at once. And, you know, here as we talk about partnerships and ecosystems, Nearbound, Channel, all that stuff, someone sitting at the center of all of this is AI. I hate generative AI. I just hate that phrase. It irks me for many different reasons. But we got Matt Sobel over from Ryder, who is currently drinking from the fire hose. And we thought, you know what, why don't we go talk to someone that's sitting at the intersect of both of these? So shout out to Nearbound Jill Rowley for introing us to Matt and being like, Ryder is hot. You have to talk to Matt. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Matt, welcome to Partner Up, my man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, Jared, when we started, Matt was like, yeah, I've been in this role for 3 months. And I was thinking, oh, that's perfect. Someone who's been working for an AI company for 3 months, that's like 30 years of experience in the AI industry, right?
That's how we think about it at Ryder too, right? The company has like since doubled since I've joined.
That's absolutely insane. So I don't know, like there's so many different places we could start. And Jared always says, even though I kind of disagree with him on this, I'm a story guy. He's always like, I don't want to just like tell your career biography. We could start all over the place. But I guess for me, I've looked at Ryder several times, especially just right up until this call. And I'm like, okay, this is like, it feels like it violates every rule in terms of it does everything for everyone. It's like, oh my gosh, you have so many use cases. You have so many personas. You're in so many places. So I have to imagine the sheer scope of what you're trying to do in partnerships. Like, what does that mean? There's got to be like a million different ways that plays out. So like, how do you think about prioritizing your focus when you could literally be embedded into everything and selling into every demographic and do it? Like, it's just such a general tool. How do you kind of wrangle that into something manageable?
It's a great question. I mean, we have definitely honed in our focus, right? So Ryder, high level generative AI platform built specifically for enterprises, right? And we've honed in on our verticals, which is healthcare, retail, financial services, right? But that's still a massive TAM, right? So I guess from the partnership side, one of the things that I'm particularly focused on is really like the SI component. So like working, knowing that generative AI is not particularly easy to adopt enterprise-wide, we really quickly realized that partnerships is going to be essential for the strategy. And once I was pitched that, going from sales, going to partnerships, I realized, wow, this is like a massive opportunity. So I'm in particular focused on like the GSI element of where Ryder sits in. And I'd love to talk to you guys about what we're up to here.
Amazing. So when you GSI, so there's, I was looking at your partner page and I saw like some smaller ones, like a Perficient, right? So like Perficient was a big partner that we did a little bit with. It actually recruited a handful of people from Perficient. Shout out to the OG partner. Podcast listeners, Justin Bartels was my co-host for a little bit, who came from Elixir, who got acquired by Perficient. Also had Ryan Bobey that we stole from over there. So familiar with them, for example. And there's a few thousand employees in Perficient, right? Like that's not just your mom and pop's marketing agency. Yeah. What have you learned kind of coming into this space and talking to, you know, logos like that and SIs around? Because what's the phrase that every SI says? For those of you who haven't worked with SIs, the phrase that SIs say is digital transformation.
Oh, yeah.
And I could not think of a word that would upset, a phrase that would upset Isaac more than digital transformation. Like, what does that mean? And you would be surprised how many billions of dollars have been made off that phrase. What are you coming up against whenever you have a conversation with a Perficient, an SI, et cetera? How are those going for you, Matt?
Yeah, those are Those are really exciting, right? So like Writer, because we're in the generative AI craze right now, what we're seeing is across all of these SIs, and by the way, we're talking to the likes of Perficient and the likes of Accenture and all the above.
Accenture, right? Deloitte, right? All of them are trying to figure this out.
They're hearing something from their clients across the board. I think every single conversation, their clients are asking them, what are we supposed to be doing with generative AI? Because right now it's a board level initiative, right? So I think we're sitting at a really unique crossroads at Writer where the SIs, in fact, are in some cases reaching out to us asking, do you have a tool that can be implemented across my clients that solves this specific need? And what we end up coming across is there's one use case that they're thinking about for Writer, maybe because they've heard about us through like a marketing channel or something, but we end up realizing, wow, there's like massive partnership potential here because Writer solves a lot of those use cases, like you mentioned, Isaac, across the board.
What I'm trying to figure out whenever I'm thinking about kind of the, you know, agencies are a permutation of a business model in the service space, you know, SIs just basically have a wider remit, is what comes to mind is, does this not take potentially time off the table? Right, SIs and agencies and service firms, they translate time into dollars. And this generative kind of space, and then specifically with Writers, to kind of taking more of a platform-like approach in terms of like how I would think about the platform opportunity for Writer, how are they seeing this as a digital transformation project, as a more billable hours, not less billable hours? Is it more consulting and process design? Like, unpack that, because every single technology that displaces time with, you know, better process, so many companies fail to translate that into service hours for these types of partners.
Definitely. And I think this is the place that we're all at now, is everyone's trying to figure out, how do we wrap services around a platform like a Writer? But you're seeing the headlines, right? Accenture invests $3 billion in AI. KPMG invests $2 billion, right? So they're all investing a ton of money into figuring out, what does the generative AI practice look like at insert SI partner? And we're actually helping them figure that out. So like part of my job and role has been sitting down with the head partners of the insurance practice and figuring out, okay, if we're going to bring this to a Fortune 100 insurance customer, how do you make money as the SI? A lot of that's coming down to like scoping use cases, you know, figuring out, what does the change management look like when we implement, you know, this kind of technology? And the best part is, you know, as we talk about like, you know, building, you know, an on-premise LLM, which is something that Writer does for customers, the consultants get really excited because they're like, wow, this isn't just, you know, hey, we sell this thing as a pass-through. It's, oh my God, we can build a business around Writer. At least that's what I'm pitching them.
Matt, is this your first partnerships role?
Oh yeah, if you couldn't tell.
I like the way you said, oh yeah.
Oh yeah, it's like drinking from the fire hose. I think, Jared, you said it the best. It's far more challenging than I expected to.
Because you were an AE before this, right?
For the last 6 years, yeah, enterprise AE.
Right.
So what did you think? I guess like you're only 3 minutes in, but what did you think a partnership's role was like, and what have been the biggest things where you're like, oh, I had no idea, like it was like this? What have been those biggest sort of differences or aha moments?
Yeah, so many aha moments. And I'm like learning so much, which is why I love the role in the first place. The reason I made the jump was because I realized, wow, like if I want to achieve my goal of being the head of go-to-market or CEO someday, I need to like learn all of these other skills. So I actually like wrote down like, okay, what do I need to do to achieve, you know, this goal? And it was like, learn how to fundraise with VCs and partners, like learn about the goals and objectives of go-to-market departments beyond just sales, right? How to operate cross-functionally. And then what I landed on was effectively like, oh, okay, maybe there's another role within the go-to-market function that I can kind of like start to check off some of these boxes. I was really fortunate too. I had a mentor that I used to be on a sales team with, who ended up running and jumping into the head of partnerships role at Writer. And she was like, Matt, you've shared explicitly with me what your goals are. This is the role for you. So back to your question, like what have I learned? I had no idea truly how cross-functional partnerships would be. And like learning how to please the folks in marketing and sales and in CS, like, holy cow, like, where, I don't even know where to start sometimes. Would love your feedback on that.
Well, I'll let Jared give you some good thoughts on where to start there. But it's just funny observation as I hear you talking. It's so interesting. I just sort of had this realization myself for years when young people I would talk with were interested in, hey, I might want to be an entrepreneur someday. I might want to start a company someday, be a CEO. I would always tell them, go learn to sell. Go into sales. You got to learn to sell, because if you don't know how to sell, or if you're scared to sell, you're not going to be able to raise money. You're not going to be able to go get your customers, whatever. And thinking about it, I might actually change that advice right now. I might say, go learn partnerships. Now, you have to be able to sell at some point, but that's part of it, right? Like, you got to convince somebody to partner with you. You got to like the spread of things that you're doing. And especially as we think about the way the market has changed, as Jared mentioned at the outset, you're at this incredible intersection. AI is this massive transformation of technology, which affects everything. And then go to market is being transformed because the way buyers buy is changing. They don't like the way that our SaaS models are trying to cram them through funnels. And this is why we talk about Nearbound all the time, like surrounding them with influence, partnering with people that they already trust. And so the nexus of these two things is like a partnerships role at an AI company. I can't think of a better setup to prepare you for what do you need to know for companies in the future? Not the past. In the future, you got to be thinking about collaboration. You got to be thinking about the entire ecosystem. You got to be like just such a cool time for you to take this role and to recognize, I got to expand my skill set. So I'm going to put myself in some place where I'm uncomfortable, you know?
Yeah. And in addition to all of the learnings, right? Like I personally believe there's a massive earnings opportunity here in the partnership space, knowing how hard it is to adopt enterprise generative AI. Like, partnerships are going to be essential for any AI company's strategy. And I think that vision is something that really excites me.
Jared, you got to give like 3 months in, partnerships role, super hot, fast growing company. I know you've got some strong opinions because you do about everything. You're ready. What are some thoughts you've got?
Well, I think that there's a really good thread to pull here because for the folks of you that are looking at like, hey, how do I get that next, you know, kind of best partner hire, or how do I put my first partner person into place? I actually think, Matt, your persona and then your interests are a perfect fit for everything that you just identified. Like right now, SaaS is kind of like the laundry detergent aisle at Publix. I'm in Florida. Isaac, you just moved here. So, you know, welcome to Publix land. You know, it's like laundry detergent. Why choose Gain versus Tide versus Downy versus any of these other, you know, kind of brands? Everything's just so noisy. Meaning whatever space that you go into, for example, like, okay, I'm going to go into sales. Why? I'm going to go into partnerships. Why? And if your answer to that why question, I think, is what's going to make you much more genuine and effective at, let's say, partnering with the marketing department. Why? Because you want to learn. People want to work with people who are curious. We just had someone on the team, Isaac, today that reached out to me and was like, hey, saw you've been doing these Nearbound plays. I wanted to pull up my account list just like you had in the blueprint. So we pulled up 360. So this is like a PSM. And just curious, like, hey, how are you doing this partner thing? I work on another team. How are you doing the partner team? That person's going to go twice as far as the next one. Why? Because they're curious. So you being curious about each department versus having that lack of curiosity. For instance, I think what that enables you to do is be more helpful, Matt. So with each department, because you're curious, you can actually go like, hey, how are you doing this, this, and this? Oh, wait. Okay, that's interesting. Maybe I can help here. Versus going and, you know, asking for stuff. You don't figure out stuff. You don't learn. Isaac, this is really your zone of genius and all the stuff you wrote about it with Praxis and Crash and stuff like that. I think this is what, you know, where the secrets are. The secrets are whenever you're like, hey, I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to be a GTM leader. Go be curious and go be helpful, man. Like, just align to the thing that pulled you to the role in the first place, and you'll kick 9 out of 10 people's butts that have a freaking handbook. So that's my thoughts. I just loved your answer. And I'm like, those are the people you need to hire. The AEs that want to become entrepreneurs. Because yeah, the best entrepreneurs are former partner people, in my opinion, that have, you know, achieved a goal.
You know, Jared, that curiosity, man, that's such a great point. Back in the day, I used to do fundraising, and I would go meet with all these really wealthy people and ask them to be contributors or increase their contribution to this nonprofit I worked for. And I would always want to know about their businesses first, because almost all of them were entrepreneurs,
right,
and a lot of money. And I would always start asking them questions. I wouldn't talk about our programs, and I was genuinely curious. I just wanted to learn. I was like, I would always ask this one question. I don't know how I stumbled upon it through all these conversations, but I found out this was the question to unlock the most interesting stuff. I would always say, what's the biggest constraint to growth with your company? And the answers to that question is actually what led me to found my first company, because every one of them would answer people. I can't find and hire enough good people. There's just not enough good people out there. Whenever all of my growth has been attributed to hiring the right people. All of our limits to growth have been that we can't find enough good people. But that question applies within your organization. If you want to go and talk to every one of those department heads, hey, what's your biggest constraint to growth? What's your biggest constraint to hitting your number? What's the thing that, right? And like, man, that's a different question. Because what do we get? I mean, so I'm in marketing. What do you get from other departments? Can I get a one pager? Right? Like, you don't get, hey, marketing, what's your biggest challenge? Right?
Right.
And most departments don't say that to each other in general. Most department leaders, most. And so you have this great opportunity being new. You almost have to ask those questions. And that's like a superpower. It's like a superpower because you don't know what you're supposed to do and what you're supposed to pretend to know. You have to go ask, and that's going to make you so much better.
Yeah, it's kind of like baked into the ethos of writer too. Everyone is expected to challenge each other, right? And understand why are we doing these things? So for instance, we had a sales offsite last week in New York. Really cool. We're remote first, right? So I got to meet a lot of my colleagues for the first time. And one of the things that really stood out to me was the light bulbs going off as we were presenting why partnerships matter in front of the sales team. And people going, wait, you can help us accelerate our deals by getting us into C-suite conversations out the gate? Like, wait a second, we're going up against the OpenAIs of the world, and you're telling me we can have a seat at the table now because we have a partner involved? And I think like that messaging, I didn't realize how much internal marketing I was going to have to do stepping into this role. So I guess like that was a huge learning for me, and I'm still on that curve.
It's funny how much content is being produced right now around the sphere of trust, even though that's like our old tagline, Isaac, trust is the new data. I'm seeing content from people that I trust posted with that as the core thesis. And there's something circling around here that I think is very interesting for people to take away on like where partner people have the biggest opportunity right now, which is, we only trust people who've been to the places we want to go. Matt, how many times have you been a CMO? Matt, how many times have you been a CRO? How many times have you been a CCO? How many times have you been a CPO? None, right? So like inherently, we need to recognize as partner people that have not been in the shoes of these other department heads, low trust, right? We're in a low trust situation when we walk in the door. Okay, well then shoot. How is trust built? Well, trust comes from helping people get where they want to go. So like the answer to what makes, in my opinion, the most effective people are these people that are maniacally helpful. Right. And you become maniacally helpful whenever you lack tacit knowledge of where that person's trying to go by being curious. Right. And I think that is really a superpower right now. Like, what constraints are happening in marketing and being the guy that's asking all the questions to go do the stuff. In a company like Writer or, anyone that's disrupting so fast in these big places, like, especially with the SIs too, right? Like, Matt, tell me how you get an SI to launch a productized service on a new platform and integrate it into their go-to-market model. Here's the answer. There isn't one, right? There is not an answer. Like anyone that says, here's exactly how you get Deloitte or Accenture to do that. I'm like, no, that's how you did it one time. Every single time is different with these monsters. So I think you're prime for that kind of opportunity.
So I wanted to play devil's advocate, Jared. I don't disagree with you, but I want to put myself in the shoes. So when you said, be the most helpful, right? Be like maniacally helpful. So imagine you're a partner person, you want to be helpful to everybody else. But I've also heard you, Jared, talk about, you got to help increase you got to focus on partner attach. Like in particular, if we're talking about sales, running a nearbound sales play, you got to have more partners involved in your sales process. So is there a tension between I'm a partner person. At the end of the day, I got to be driving more results and I want to show that we're getting partners involved in more deals and more marketing efforts and more whatever. if you take that approach, it's like hard to not go and try to convince those other departments, get partners involved more, work with partners. Work, like, how do you say, I want to be helpful to you while also recognizing that what you maybe need is something that you don't necessarily think you need or want? Like, right? You see what I'm saying? Like, how do you kind
I do.
Of those two things?
So Matt, I'll pull you in by asking you a question and to answer Isaac's. Are you explicitly working across SIs, or are you also touching tech partners right now?
Yeah, we're doing tech partners, platforms. So like strategic partnerships with like the NVIDIAs and Googles of the world, platforms with ZoomInfo, Metadata.
Right. And here's where I might provide a framework that's actually from the writing world and from the marketing world to the partner world. So for example, stock and flow. Isaac, that's a framework and mental model we've used for thinking about our own content strategy, right? Flow is the ephemeral kind of like day-to-day social posts. Stock are these big pillar pieces that make, you know, dents over time. So let's apply that same framework to partnering, Matt. Like the SIs that you're talking about, you know, Accenture versus, you know, Proficient, or let's say even a division of WPP. That's another, you know, big agency SI type of organization where maybe you're breaking into a 250 person, right? You know, agency, or you're, you know, working the big dog. How are you thinking about that from, let's say, a sales perspective, like getting the singles in place, so the flow with, you know, a smaller partner that's like, hey, we got that win on the board. Because what happens over time is like they're going to get Accenture, you know, fatigue. Like, yeah, we've been hearing about Accenture for a year now. It's like, and every week, every month, it's like, we're closer. But it's like, that's that big thing where it's like you land that giant, you know, $500,000, $250,000, $1 million deal. Those are the stock pieces, but that doesn't keep the wheels running. How are you kind of utilizing that to, you know, in your first 3 months with sales or marketing, whatever department you feel like you're closer to?
Yeah. It's definitely, we're like hand in hand with sales at this point. And I think like you mentioned Proficient. This is one that to me, I wasn't super knowledgeable about them before I jumped into Writer, but I had worked with like the McKinsey's and Bain's of the world for some time before that. And what I realized was like, if I'm going to do this right, I kind of need to take a crawl, walk, run approach where I get some wins quickly. And I needed to find the right partner to do that. And Proficient was perfect because they had the focus and the industry experience, and they loved digital transformation just like you, Isaac. But they weren't talking to everybody that we could potentially be competitive with. They wanted to find one partner where they knew that they could go to market with someone and do it right. And because we had that focus and attention, as opposed to like calling on every senior partner at Accenture and the 750,000 people that are there, Proficient was like the perfect size to get those singles, which is what we did. And then we found that repeatable approach to then bring to larger partners, which has been working really, really well.
So that's kind of my way of answering, because I kind of read between the lines there when I was looking at some of those logos. It's like you have to, right? You have to secure the bag and have proof. And that's that kind of like stock and flow concept where the thing is, I think the most tactical advice I'd give after that is that keep in mind that that story, that win might resonate with the head of sales or a CRO, a VP of sales, that AE, you, and maybe the people at Proficient that were directly on the account. But that story has to be replicated from each AE to HAE, right? Or each division or each whatever. And recognizing that like, okay, that curiosity that got me that first win, like that's the same thing that's going to give me the second win, right? Each context, each business division, it's like, hey, we have proof the partners are working. It's like, no, you had that proof over there. Where's mine? You know, like in the sales team, like where was my proof? That guy closed it. Okay, cool. I'm talking to you now. I'll at least take you seriously, but I don't trust it yet. How are you seeing the difference between, because I've always find this so fascinating, like the pockets of like the people who might be slightly pilled and are coming your direction. Like you have some haters and you have some people that are like, yeah, I'm willing to lean in, right?
Yeah. I mean, like the overwhelming support now that we get from the believers, specifically on the sales and the marketing side now, because we've thrown some really successful events that meet their KPIs. I think on the sales side, they just want all of the partner sourced leads now. Like it's not even close. There are like some sellers on our team that see the value. And I think after this offsite I mentioned earlier, everyone is like, oh man, I need to get involved with this. But to your point, there's people that are willing to take calls with partners, even if there isn't a particular customer in their territory, just to have the conversation and build those relationships, which has been awesome.
Matt, so interesting as you answered that kind of like, how did you get those wins? Like you just, and I don't know, I'm curious to ask you if this was just instinctive or if you have experienced something like this before, or if you came across some, you know, read something about, hey, this is a good way to do it. But that crawl, walk, run approach, which I'm hearing more and more people kind of talk about that. I remember, Jared, when we started Partner Hacker, you were like, we got to have a crawl, walk, run here. And I'd actually not heard that exact phrase. Maybe I had, but I, you know, it was not big. But that concept of like, this is how you bridge the worlds of what you have to do out there in the market and what you have to do internally is exactly with that. It's like, start by getting a win that the internal team can say, okay, you're doing something valuable. That gives you a little more leeway to go back and put your folks in the market for a little bit longer term, come back with a slightly bigger win, and you kind of get to like take those chunks. I'm just really curious how did you come to that? How did you like come to that recognition? Like, I got to get a couple, I got to stack up some quick wins.
Yeah, it's a good thought. I truthfully don't know where it all came from. It's just been the approach that I've taken with partners. For instance, I was doing some channel sales in a few companies back. I've been a serial like startup guy for a while now. And what we realized was like, in order for them to truly want to like sell the platform, they had to use it first. So we kind of coined that approach. We said, okay, if you're going to sell Writer, you need to see how powerful this thing could be across Accenture internally before you wanted to start going to market together. So that's the crawl, walk, run, I think is like the same approach we take with our customers and clients. And we talk about that all the time. And I think on a partner up episode, I heard AMG talking about it too. So I don't know if it's something that I can coin. I think you guys have been talking about it for a long time.
It's one of those things like, the well-known phenomenon of simultaneous discovery. Like, I don't even know where it came from, but wherever it came from, it's in the air right now. Somehow everywhere I go, people seem to be talking about it. So it's like, you know, just in the zeitgeist.
I've used it on 4 calls today. Not kidding. Talking to heads, VPs of partnerships, people just like this, where like, it seems like, wow, this person must be crushing it right now. Like, that company's doing really good. They just made this acquisition. This thing's happening right here. Talk to the head of partnership and it's just, you know, it's Groundhog Day. It's like, oh, shoot, I know exactly where you're at right now. And it's like, oh, yeah, but we have to, there's this big thing and we'll be there in a year. And I was like, oh, we started this call with a joke. So like, I'm just going to say this bullshit. Like, we both know that's bullshit. Why did you say that? And he was like, well, you know, it's funny. Yeah, it is bullshit. You know, like... So what are you going to do? And I, literally my takeaway from that conversation was like, look, what you got to go do is you got to go get some wins right now this quarter, right? You have a crawl approach. You got to choose the geo, the product, the territory, the segment, the reps, whoever it is, where you have the best believers and the best partners. And you need to show that you can bring this into their world, right? Definitively, like as a crawl phase. And then walk phase, here's where you should probably go and anchor to that milestone. And then here's the kind of the run phase, and you generally know where you want to go. And the org has this big thing that's like happening in 12 months. But by the time you get there, you're now integrated as part of the plan. You have some proof, small proof, and then bigger proof. And I'm like, align on that plan with, you know, your CRO and your ops team and go, my objective is in 12 months to be here. Here's how I'm going to get there. And get them, you know, involved in the plan. And he's like, man, I really love that crawl, walk, run framing. Okay, that's what I'm going to do. You know, and it's like, it's not rocket science. It's simple, not easy.
By the way, Jared, you also mentioned the stock and flow idea. I think it's interesting to kind of like think, almost layer that on as well. And I got a shout out. Sean Blanda was the first person I heard stock and flow from over at Crossbeam. So shout out to Sean. But
Sean's regretting telling us that, by the way. That's a joke. I love Sean. Shout out, Sean.
Anytime you give Jared or I like a useful framework, we'll start talking about it so much and then we'll forget where we heard it. And then we'll just keep talking about it. And like, I've had to do this, be like, I know somebody else told me this. No, but just that the kind of like, you can layer some of these frameworks in interesting ways, but thinking of, you know, crawl, walk, run, let me get those easy wins, then I can build up. But then I also have kind of these two different workflow types that kind of work on different, right? Where one is like, I need continuous delivery of some level of value. And then I've also got these bigger chunks. Go ahead, Jared.
Oh, I didn't mean to interrupt you directly. But here's the thing. So Matt, I'll ask you a question. this was my big insight around crawl, walk, run. It's just a project management, you know, method, right? So like taking a big objective and breaking it into like, you know, more tactical, more strategic. How are you thinking about managing projects right now? Like, you're probably not at all. You're just like, hey, it's drinking from the fires. Everything's chaos, right?
You know, it's so funny you say that. That is the most challenging part of my job right now. It's the prioritization of the long-term objectives and making our way towards that while managing like the partner-sourced pipeline and like figuring out how I like prove the value of partners while at the same time like making these things like massive.
Isaac, you'll see, like, you know, shout out to Alex Hernandez, my chief of staff. Like, Isaac, would Partner Hacker exist if Alex was not here? Like, no.
No. I'm not sure you would have
killed me. Yeah, you would have killed me a long time ago, and I probably wouldn't have made it to here, you know, absent that, because this was actually a realization that I had when I was at Drift, because I, you know, as being an entrepreneur and like running your own company, you have direct control of product, and you understand that like how product gets shipped is through project management. So you have these things like daily stand-up, and you have a backlog of stuff that you want to do. And then you have a planning and scoping session. You decide what's going in sprints. And like, there's this rhythm to how shit gets better. Please point to me in go-to-market teams, especially whenever you're talking from the partnerships perspective, what is your rhythm of the business for improving your go-to-market motion? And I mean, crickets, like, oh, that's the ops team. Really? So how do they run it? Where does your backlog of stuff go? Like, what's that meeting look like? Like, there are really helpful role models that are even inside of our own companies for like how that works. And it's the reason why I built this partner ecosystem roadmap that kind of has like, hey, here's how partnerships is not a department, but a strategy for every department. You had the head of partnerships, and then there was a role right above that that was what I call the programs manager. Because the programs manager is just the project manager. And I think that's something to surface really transparently, like with marketing leaders, with sales leaders, with success leaders. You have all the ideas in the world, but what's the plan? Who does what by when? So that crawl, walk, run framework, why is it helpful? Because you're sizing in. You're going, okay, there's a time horizon. Who is doing what by when? Okay, now we're talking a plan. And I think there's some innovation here for partner teams to help be more of that project management and right-size things to get shit done inside of go-to-market orgs. Like, if you're exceptionally good at helping manage projects and pulling some resources and, you know, just hacking things together, I think you're probably going to be one of the, you know, the marketing leader's favorite things. Like, you're on task and you're following through on what you agreed to and helping run that project. So there's something there. I'm curious, have you like looked into that through the org or like the ops team or anything around that, Matt?
You know, I truthfully haven't. I think everyone is kind of operating in a silo, but at the same time, we have no middle management at Writer. So you're held accountable. And I think on the program manager piece you mentioned, I love that. In fact, it's actually how we work with our clients, right? We make sure that in order to like, you know, accurately and effectively adopt AI, you need to have a program manager that's not going to be using it day to day, but actually helping, you know, spread this across the org. Something that I'm interested in bringing back to my team, though.
So, you know, Jared and I have actually debated about this sometimes internally. It's probably where you are right now and where the company is right now. Like, you don't need something more yet. And this is something that I've really had to learn. Like, you imagine that startups, you know, okay, if they're going to grow, they're going like this. So everything you do today needs to be something that you build on and do more and bigger of tomorrow. But that's actually false. If you've ever seen that cartoon of, it's about product, but I think this applies to other things as well. It's like a car, and it says like there's two versions. One is like, you know, MVP is just like a wheel. And then like, you know, the next stage is like two wheels and a frame and a steering wheel. And then the next stage, and it's useless until it gets to the final full stage, versus the real way to do it is MVP is like a skateboard. And then the next level, it has a handle, it's a scooter, and then it's a bike, and then it's a motorcycle, and that, right? And each of those, you can't turn like a scooter into a car. you have to like start over. You can take the learnings from that, but it's a different thing for that phase. So it's kind of that whole like do things that don't scale component, that things that you have to do at a certain phase, you are going to have to do something totally different the next phase. And that's okay. Like you can go out and execute something to get that crawl, to get that early win. And if someone says, well, what's that going to look like in 5 years? You can say, I don't give a shit. I need it right now. We're not going to be doing this in 2 years, in 5 years. Like, Jared, how many times with Partner Hacker were you like, hey, we're never going to do this again. We have to do it right now, but we won't do it 6 months from now, right? Like, you've got to do some of those things that you're going to have to change. So I think that's a good thing to remember as well. You don't have to build processes that are going to scale infinitely and like project too far into the future in terms of like, you know, like chunking it off into discrete, I guess, phases makes a lot more sense. We're like, for this phase, I'm going to build this, and then I'm going to start and build something totally different at a later phase. What I'm building now doesn't have to serve me then, you know?
Totally. Matt, I'll ask you a question. Why do you think people are, let's say, timid for project management, like go-to-market teams, from you being an AE to you coming in at, you know, Writer? Like, obviously, the product's hot right now and y'all are doing very well. What do you think stands in the way of, let's say, you know, building a, you know, a unicycle, a bicycle, a tricycle, a motorcycle, right? Like going up the value chain and iteration over time.
Yeah, it's a good question. I guess, like, help me understand what you're getting at here.
You know, is it a lack of, like, I heard you say siloed, right? So like, I'll often hear a response like that. And the response that I haven't heard from most people is that what it does is it limits choice. It forces you to make a choice, right? And what you told me your biggest problem and challenge was that the delineation between like the big long-term, like, holy cow, we nailed this thing with X Fortune, you know, 100 company alliance in the tech sector that could be a 10X, that could be worth not just millions, but tens of millions and or hundreds of millions in enterprise value. Like, those things are there and true. But when it comes to like, okay, we're going to project plan, well, you have to make a choice, right? Like, what am I doing now? Like, what is a priority now? What are the rocks now? And I feel like the biggest trap that we can fall into as entrepreneurs or partner people is what I refer to as, you know, shiny object syndrome. Right? Because everything, the next big opportunity could be the thing. The next big thing could be the thing. Is there a lot of shiny object syndrome at, not to say it's indicative of Writer, let's just maybe say the space and a new role?
Yeah, definitely. Especially when you're not sure, like, is this what I should be doing right now in the moment? Should I be on a podcast right now, or should I be, you know, helping Fox and Dog?
The answer is always yes on the
podcast. Yes, most definitely. But you make a great point, Jared. Like, the reality is, you really don't know, especially when you're new to a role or a function, how to run the playbook in a way where you know that your actions are actually going to deliver outcomes. Something that I'm really fortunate, I guess, like, or lucky to have right now in my role is a leader who is like not afraid to roll up her sleeves and like be in the trenches with me.
Bingo. So it's very important.
I think like her understanding of the business objectives or OKRs, and then being able to say like, okay, now we're going to build a sequence to send to our partners and keep them up to speed with like our new use cases. Like, that is for me what helps me understand my prioritization matrix. And I hope we can scale that as we, you know, are hiring for like 5 new members of our team today. If you're interested in partnerships at Writer, please do apply. Shameless plug. We need to keep that like mentality. Like, everyone needs to kind of be a dupe.
I got a partner hack here that I can throw out too. That's I imagine in Writer too. Like, I full disclosure, like, this isn't like a, you know, advertisement or anything, but I am actually genuinely curious because I do use GPT for just personal things on a day to day basis.
Yeah.
Can you put things like custom instructions for like, let's say, yourself in Writer, right?
That's exactly. We do that for every enterprise down to the use case level.
Right. Perfect. So here's a hack that I've been doing, and you could do this in Writer today, or you could do it with GPT if you're on Plus. And Isaac, I haven't told you about this one. It's pretty cool. I'll put them in the, let's remind me to do this and get these in the show notes. Isaac, is the custom instructions that I've been putting together. Oh my gosh. I kind of put together some stuff from a few entrepreneurs that I respect, that like I saw them share some of theirs, And the big one, the unlock for me, was putting in to be like, I want you to act as my project manager, meaning whenever I come to you with a task, seek clarity. Like, I really build it all out to elicit the next best thing from me. So, for example, there was three things I had to ship in the last day that was doing stuff for other people. But I'm like, shit, I don't know what to do. Like, I know I need to get this done, but like, how do I get it done? And it's basically acted as my project manager. It's like, okay, you should need to get this. You need to go figure this out. Okay, yep, perfect. Okay, boom, here's the compiled doc. So maybe there's something here with AI and having a project manager to help you out. Who knows?
I love that. I love the AI companion. I want to build a small CEO that knows what my objectives are and helps me prioritize that.
Oh my gosh, partner teams, we need that so much. So much.
Yeah, maybe that's a good paint us the future, Matt, that you see. Like, when you start thinking about, when you start getting a little wild, getting speculating a little bit about the stuff you're seeing that you're doing with the writer and where the market's going, what do you see being the biggest differences? I mean, we talked a little bit about, hey, AI is transforming things and hey, go-to-market's changing, but like, I don't know. I'm curious if you just have any thoughts or any, like, you know, chat over a beer. Here's where I see business going.
Oh my gosh, so much. This will be another hour segment. So buckle up. I'm just gonna say this. The reason I'm at Writer really is because of my like desire to learn and grow, but my infatuation with AI. Like, I've been a huge obsessor and nerd about it for quite some time. So like, ask me last week and it'll be like, oh, like my ability to create images and be creative. I think the thing that excites me the most about AI is the fact that I can be a creator now without like knowing how to code or, you know, having a really impressive Photoshop background. Like, I can build things that I was never able to do before. That by far to me is like the unlock. And then like productivity hacks, like everything I do now, I think like, how can I spend less time doing the nitty gritty and like summarize these notes for my call. So like every call that I have at Writer, I synthesize it through Writer's recaps feature and I just get the download. And like that, this is like the early stages here, Isaac. So there's nothing that excites me more about this. So
yeah, I love that you said the like everyone can be a creator. And I think it's easy to hear that so often that we kind of like forget just how radical that is and how intense and amazing that is. I hear people a lot lament this. I don't even know if this is true, but I've heard people like tweeting this over the last several years that like, oh, the average like American kid, the number one thing they want to do is be a YouTuber. And like kids in China, the number one thing they want to do is be an astronaut. Isn't this terrible? America's horrible. Whatever. Like, maybe there's, I've got kids. So like, I understand the fear of like, oh, my kid just wants to be a YouTuber. They have no ambition. But if I zoom out and I ask myself, you know, kids pick things as a proxy. When you're little, you're like, I want to be a fireman, because you don't you know you want adventure, you want to help people, you've only seen a handful of options that represent that, so you pick something because it kind of is like a stand-in because you don't have enough knowledge. When I think about that, what kids are recognizing is they're the creator. They have that autonomy, they have that freedom, they have that versus like astronaut. It's like, I'm on somebody else's budget, somebody else's plan. I'm like a cog, right? I don't get to just go take a spaceship wherever I want to, right? I'm like in a program. It's all pre-planned. It's all preset. Like, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. What kids are scratching at there is what you're talking about. Like, and it gets so fundamental. You empower every single person. And what does that change in terms of companies, the way that they're set up? Like, what is a company? Can you have like a loose collection of people who come together and work on projects and shorter term contractual basis? Can you have like what does
partners
it mean?
Or mean, something? Yeah.
Right. Like this is so cool. The more you let it sink in, and we've already seen how much empowering people to create just with the lower barriers to entry of the internet and tools like, you know, cameras and everything like that being ubiquitous. You add AI into the mix and like, oh man, I think it's just incredible.
Yeah, partner enablement, man. Like, that could be coming next. Like, oh yeah, here's my partner program. Like, let's summarize some content for like enablement just in time go to market content. So like, Matt, we're going to have you and the partner team at Writer back from like how you're using AI to like help build the partner program too. Cause I'm sure there's lots of champagne drinking and when it's not as pretty dog food you know, eating. They're a writer right now. Man, I appreciate you coming on Partner Up and sharing, you know, the lessons from drinking from the fire hose. It's a great conversation to kind of have to, you know, balance like, hey, what's happening out there? What's happening at the front line of these companies? Lots of little nuggets to pull out of up here. And Isaac, that was a hell of a way to end it, man. Like I was sitting there staring off into space, nodding my head like, thank you for wrapping up the pod that way. That was an inspirational take because I'm like thinking about my own kids now. You got me thinking about my kids on a partner podcast.
Look, to be clear, I want to go to space, but I want to do it as a creator in my own DIY spaceship while I'm YouTubing the whole thing. I mean, come on.
No, it's just such a helpful framework. Matt, thank you so much. Isaac, we got anything to plug before we bounce?
We will be at Catalyst. So this will be dropping, I think, about a week before Catalyst starts. So, and we're going to have a live podcast interview there. We're going to have a live podcast.
Oh, in the surprise announcement, Isaac, during my session.
Okay, Jared has a session Wednesday morning at Catalyst, a workshop, a nearby workshop. I am not exaggerating. Now, you know, we might hype things once or twice on this show. We kind of like a little hype, but I am not exaggerating when I tell you this will be the best workshop you have ever attended at a B2B conference. And we're going to drop something pretty big. So come to the workshop. Come see us at the podcast booth. We'll be all over the place.
If you're in Catalyst at Denver, there is not another room that you want to be in than that room, I promise. History is going to drop there. I'll put it that way, history. I'm excited. So we'll see y'all there. Matt, appreciate you. Partner Up, peace out. We'll see you all next time.